morning, everyone. Good morning. We're going to go ahead and get started. This is the Capital Program Planning and Real Estate Committee meeting of July 13th. Mr. Strickland and Mr. Costa, the chair and vice chair, could not join us today. I'll be stepping in for them, serving as temporary chair. Also here today is Mr. Augustine and Mr. Jones Joe. Any other members of the board. First, we have the approval of the agenda before us. We have the approval of two meeting minutes and three action items. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda? Motion by Mr. Augustine. Second. By Mr. Jornberger. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Next, approval of the minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. To open the meeting, I apologize. We have to announce the safety contact before we get started. I'd like to ask Douglas Cornett, our acting chief safety officer, for today's safety contact.
First, we saw in the case of emergency facility, we dressed the main doors and closed the exit, moving anybody exits by a similar one of the national police. Automatic external keyboards are available on the watch station. Car spaces are strategically located throughout the building, restroom as a broadcast. Safety contact with the main parts of today. The severe heat that's going on, we have some real possibilities to feel better this afternoon. So please be aware of the situation if you will test that severe weather can happen anytime, anywhere this time of year. Severe weather can be hazardous conditions. By thunderstorms, winds, tornadoes, flash damp, or flash flood. Pay attention to what is happening in your area. Honor the weather forecast locally. Hopefully, you have it on the app on your phone. Okay, customers can keep that to see the weather and the employees. The agency can help. No use of your weather plan. Be vigilant and familiar. Make sure everyone knows rendezvous points, safe places to shelter, where to evacuate most of the crowd. Keep practicing.
Thank you, Mr. Cornett. Okay, back to the agenda. Now that the administrative, we have the approval of the minutes, I'm sorry. So we have the two meeting minutes of March 9th and the executive committee session of March 23rd. You've all had a chance to review those minutes. Are there any changes or comments on those minutes? If not, is there a motion?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Augustine.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Jones Joe. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Next, I want to briefly describe the three items that we have on the agenda before us today. First, the committee is being asked to approve the public hearing staff report for the removal of the surface parking lot at the College Park Metro Station to allow for a joint development project. The removal of the parking lot actually received board approval back in 2003, but given the amount of time that has passed since then, Metro again went out to the public to get its feedback, and the board is being asked to reaffirm its decision to remove the surface parking lot. Next, staff will be requesting approvals to allow for up to 6 revenue enhancement designed to increase use of Metro's parking facilities, generate revenue, and increase transit ridership. And finally, staff is requesting approval to construct the Union Street Metro project to negotiate and execute reimbursable project agreements with the District of Columbia, Maryland, the Union Station Redevelopment Corporation, and the National Railroad Passenger Corporation, better known as Amtrak, and to add this project to Metro's capital improvement program as a reimbursable project. In addition to being a regional transportation hub, Union Station is Metro's busiest rail station. Over the years, the board has discussed the need to improve the passenger flow there, which is now possible with this project. Now I'd like to turn the floor over to Ms. Albert, who will take us through the first item.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Smedberg. The first item on the agenda today is a request that the board approve the compact public hearing staff report on proposed changes to the College Park, University of And in doing so, you would be confirming an amendment to the mass transit plan to remove a 530-space surface parking lot. There is a lot of history on this project. As early as 2003, the board amended the mass transit plan and authorized the surface parking lot to be removed, as well as authorized the construction of a replacement garage that not only replaced the 530 parking spaces, but added an additional 700 spaces, and the garage today is built and is 1,290 parking spaces. We have put this property on the market for joint development over the years, and it was not until recently, July 2015, when we issued our third solicitation for joint development, that we were able to secure a developer that was able to move forward on this joint development. We've been moving very aggressively since the selection. We selected Gilbane Development. The board approved that selection, as well as provided authorization to staff to execute a term sheet. Earlier this year in February, the board authorized staff to execute a joint development agreement, as well as to hold the compact public hearing for which this staff report is written. And then on April 24th, is when the compact public hearing was held. Just some background to remind you of the project. This is the site that we're talking about. The red outline indicates where the surface parking lot is. It's to the east of the College Park Metro Station. The box on the top is where the existing parking garage is. The parking garage was constructed in 2005. It was financed by Prince George's County, as well as by the state of Maryland, specifically to make way for joint development at this metro station. It's a 5-acre surface lot. 1 acre of that 5 acres is called Brook Parcel, and that will remain as open space in the future. And then the transit-oriented development at this time is particularly interesting because this station currently accommodates both the Green Line and a MARC station, and then with the future eventuality of a Purple Line, this will also be a new Purple Line stop. And that has been included in all of the conversations with the developer so that the Purple Line could be accommodated in the future. This is a rendering of the proposed joint development. Basically 430 residential units plus ground floor retail, which would be facing Brooks Parcel directly in front of Metro Station entrance to create really what will be a much more inviting sense of place and TOD. We've estimated that the joint development itself will generate an additional 350 new daily boardings at College Park. And the parking garage that I mentioned before can accommodate any displaced parkers that are currently at the surface lots. We had a very robust public participation plan, as well as a strong response rate. We distributed over 1,000 brochures. We had staff at the parking facility handing out flyers, taking comment cards, doing direct outreach to parkers, encouraging them to take an online survey, and as well as held the compact public hearing. Public comment was received between March 25th and May 4th, and we received a total of 107 submissions with comments. They were taken in written testimony at the hearing and through comment cards and online comments. The public comments that we received were positive. Mr. Augustine attended the hearing on April 24th. We had three people testify at the hearing. We received letters of support from the county executive's office as well as from the district council member. There was significant support for transit-oriented development. But there was also some opposition to development, 13 opposed and 31. preferences for surface parking versus garage parking, and also concerns about the adequacy of capacity. I'll just note that 65% of Metro's existing parking portfolio is contained within garages as opposed to surface lots. So there is familiarity with parking in Metro garages, but this is not unusual that there would be a preference for surface lots. So we evaluated the adequacy of parking. As I mentioned, the garage has close to 1,300 total spaces. Currently, on average, there are about 1,000 people that park at College Park. And just based on my own observation of being out there, many of the people parking are not are accessing a variety of different transit bus facilities. Some that go directly from the station to the university, for example, and folks are parking and not necessarily riding Metro. The total count of transit riders, parkers, and non-transit rider parkers is 1,000. So there's adequate parking remaining within the garage if we were to remove the lot. So as a result of adequacy of parking, as well as support from the jurisdiction for transit-oriented development, as well as support for transit-oriented development from the public, this last go-around, the staff report recommends moving forward with joint development, removing the surface parking lot, and the board approving the public hearing staff report, thereby amending or reconfirming the mass transit plan that was amended to remove the surface parking lot. With that, I'll take any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Albert. Mr. Augustine, would you like to start with any comments or questions?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. I can comment for sure. I'm very excited about this. I've been very, very happy and pleased with the work that Ms. Albert and the team has put into this this project and others that are going on in Prince George's County. I know because I've heard from leadership within Prince George's County and the state that they shared with the general manager a desire for increased activity on real estate development, and I told them that that's what they're doing. They're pushing hard, and I really am very much on board with this. And I, you know, my girls went to basketball camp at the University of Maryland this week. There's all kinds of great development going on there. This will contribute to this as well. We got really great momentum, and I'm looking forward to everybody supporting this project. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments from committee members or any other board members?
Yes, Ms. Albert, I just had a couple of questions on some of the calculations on the parking spaces. I noticed that you say that on the average that we're using up about 1,000 of the parking spaces. What's the range on that? I mean, are there days when we're well over that or under that, you know, depending if it's the middle of the week, or is that average include Saturdays and Sundays? How did you calculate that?
Yeah, that is parking demand at its peak. So on weekdays, in the middle of the day.
Okay, so that 1,000, that's the top number that we're seeing right now.
Correct.
Okay. With the development that you have planned here, is there concern about, Metro ridership parking being used for other purposes for the commercial area there? I mean, are they going to be using the parking garage in order to go to whatever restaurants or other things that are there at that location?
Well, this is primarily a residential development, mm-hmm. and the developer will be required to provide parking for the residents. So there will be adequate parking for the development in and of itself. I'll talk about this a little bit more, which is about parking management, in the next presentation, which
okay.
is where you're going with this.
Yeah, exactly.
In that there are people who park in Metro facilities who are not using the Metro. And so we would like to introduce some tools to better manage that so that if ridership were to increase and we needed to provide more parking at this station for Metro riders, that we would have ways to manage that and deter non-riders. But that's for the next presentation. Right now, we don't have any concerns. There is a development that I think people are anticipating and desire of a innovation district by the University of Maryland. There's a campus across the street from the metro station. The reason this project is so important to this metro station and to this area is because it starts to fill in and create a place and introduce mm-hmm. residences as well as some retail so that that commercial development across the street that's not metro-owned can occur. And if that were to move forward, and I think we've got several years before that were to happen, then we would start to really need to think about how to best manage this parking garage so that it really accommodates metro riders.
And my final question, the 350 additional riders that we're talking about, when would you predict that would happen? I'm not sure what the timescales are on this. Is that 2 years out, 3 years out?
That would be, we assume, at occupancy of the development, which usually, depending on the developer, is typically a one-year lease-up period. So this is multifamily development. The desirability of people to live on or at, right at the metro, are people who naturally want to ride the metro.
But on the project schedule, is that two years out, 3 years out?
Yeah, so the project is looking to begin construction in 2 years, and then we assume an 18 to 24-month construction period, so 4 years from now.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions and comments, Mr. Jones?
Yes, with regard to the ridership, I assume the 350 boardings is kind of based on just the project itself. It doesn't factor in the purple line?
Correct.
Okay, so the purple line, we would assume that number would be higher than 350?
Correct.
Okay, and then...
And if the development across the street were to occur, that would also increase.
Right. And I also wondered, with regard to New Carrollton and this project, have you shared your most current ridership information and estimates with the MTA?
I'm not sure if we have.
I'll make sure that we do. You mean for the Purple Line and there are mm-hmm. other discussions?
Mm-hmm. Because both of these projects were pretty much stalled, I think, when the environmental document was prepared, and this is new information. Two major developments in the last 6 months that you're moving forward with. They're fundamentally changing the landscape of that corridor. So let's make sure that the MTA is has the most accurate information to factor into their ongoing pursuit of the Purple Line. This is great. I'm so pleased to see so much good work going on in Prince George's County and bearing the fruits of our labor.
Okay, any other final questions or comments? If not, Mr. Augustine, is there a motion?
I'd love to make the motion to accept the report.
All right, motion by Mr. Augustine. Second. Mr. Drumshire. Second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Albert, I think you're up next. We're going to talk now about the parking revenue enhancements.
Okay. While the presentation is being pulled up, I'll just make a few brief remarks. This is a long presentation because there's a lot packed into it. But in general, the purpose of the presentation today is to bring forward several proposals. You don't have to accept or approve them as a bundle. You can pick and choose. It's a menu. But we try to evaluate how best to introduce flexibility into our parking management, how to maximize the value of the asset, and frankly, just how to improve operations. And part of that is generating more revenue from this asset so that we are able to fund cleaning, maintenance, capital improvements, all the things that are required to manage this very significant asset. Again, I'll say that while they're numerous, most of the proposals that I'm making are modest from an asset management perspective. And the goal is not only to produce more revenues, and I mentioned why we would want to do that, but several of the proposals are not revenue-based, and they are with the intent to increase utilization of the parking lot so they can be used more readily for community and commercial activities during non-peak hours. There's another item on this agenda, which we will ask the board to decide on, and that is an amendment to the non-metro user parking fee program. I'll explain it in a little bit more detail at the end, but we would like to ask that Metro employees be exempted from having to pay a non-metro user parking fee, that higher rate above the daily rate, and it particularly concerns New Carrollton or at any station where there's actually a nearby metro facility, rail yard, office building. I'll explain that more later. Okay, just a little bit of background. We manage for approximately 42,000 parking spaces. They're contained within 28 garages, 30 park-and-ride surface lots, park-and-ride surface lots, and 44 kiss-and-rides. On average, this was from FY16, we have 42,000 daily parkers. Again, this is an average at peak. We don't count, and I've not included in here the average on weekends. In FY16, we generated $45 million in revenue for Metro, an additional $10 million in jurisdictional parking surcharge funds. The board has historically approved many different parking programs and fees to support revenue generation as well as asset utilization. As you can see here, the current parking fee programs include the daily parking rate, which you approve annually or biannually on occasion, monthly reserved parking, non-rider fee, and then a subset of the non-rider fee is something called a special event fee that we're currently only applying at Largo Town Center and Morgan Boulevard. Historically, the primary goal of providing parking was to encourage transit use by automobile drivers. This is still and will always be the primary purpose of Metro owning and operating parking, but I'd like to introduce a second goal, which is to maximize use of our parking assets, meaning that we desire to utilize vacant or empty spaces for revenue, community, and commercial purposes, if and only if those spaces are not needed by transit riders. I've referenced several times the concept of utilization. I think it's an important discussion for us to have and lays the ground for what I'm proposing. The following is what I mean by utilization. I evaluate it in two different ways. One is by time. Time that the asset is collecting revenue. And second is by vacancy. So in the first metric, we are currently collecting parking fees 46% of the time that the asset is available to the public. Please remember that we are paying for expenses, security, cleaning, lighting, 24 hours a day. So of that 100% of the time that we have expense being incurred of this asset, we're only collecting revenue currently 46% of the time. If we were a private parking operator, we would be aiming to collect revenue 100% of the time. We are clearly not a private parking operator. And so what I'd like to propose and what is being proposed today is how to get us to a target of 65% revenue generation of the total number of hours available during the year. Another way to look at utilization is, again, by capacity or by vacancy, which is what most people are familiar with. On average, on weekdays, we have 25% parking vacancy. This is across the entire system. Certain stations have much higher vacancy. Other stations have much lower vacancy. But, again, average across the entire portfolio, 15,000 spaces a day are not being used at this moment. And this number will change year to year depending on what's going on with ridership. On the weekends, we have 75% vacancy. It exactly flip-flops. So for the most part, people are using the parking asset during the weekday to commute to work. So on the weekends, we have huge facilities, 46,000 parking spaces that are not being used. So there, that is where we have not only the largest upper bath one spot, there are a couple spots here, to this image here. The blue dots represent the size of the actual number of parking spaces. So you can see at the end of line or towards the end of the system, we have offered greater volume of parking. And then there are some very unusual cases where Anacostia, for example, or Addison Road used to be end-of-line stations. And so we had, for example, at Addison Road, a 2,000-space parking garage, and at Anacostia, similar, a very large parking garage. But when we extended the line and provided end-of-line parking further out, we see the utilization at Anacostia and at Addison Road drop, even though they are close-in stations. So, yeah, there's an interesting dynamic that way. And you can see that as you get closer to the core of the region, and in D.C., we actually don't provide that much parking. So there is a correlation with proximity to, high-density areas where we are not providing it. The parking lot with, the lowest utilization is around 35%, 40% utilization. And there are parking lots that have really close to 100% utilization, and people are, parking, on the curbs or near the curbs and what have you, trying to manage that. So you really see the pool. Okay. So the first set of proposals are really pilot programs. We would like to test how the market would behave and really understand what the market is if we were to do the following. And this is a combination of, and these proposals are based on what our intuition and what our knowledge of the parking operation is, so it's not a shot in the dark. We're proposing things that we think could have potential for revenue generation in the future. So pilot proposal number 1A is a six-month pilot to expand the hours of operation. Currently, the hours of operation are 9:30 to 1 a.m. If you remember, we only collect fares on the exit. So before 9:30, the gates are up, and people can just freely flow into the parking lot. But if people exit before 9:30, they're basically exiting for free. So we have people who are parking overnight, for example. As long as they leave by 9:30 in the morning, they will have parked overnight and used our asset and not have to pay anything. And so we think by advancing the hour to 7:30 in the morning, we can capture more of those overnight parkers. And there are some locations where, in fact, the overnight parkers are not transit riders. They are local residents who are using our asset in lieu of paying for a private space. So we think by moving it up to 7:30, we'll capture more of that market. And then we've also suggested Monday through Thursday, with the hour changes of the rail system, cutting short the hour to 12:30 to be an hour post closing of the rail system. So we'll save ourselves a half hour in expense. So that's just an adjustment. Then on Friday, same thing. We would like to just change the hours to marry or to match 7:30 morning opening and then 2 a.m. closing, because the metro system doesn't close until 1 a.m. We would implement. Yep.
Could I just ask one question? I was under the impression that overnight parking was not allowed in any of the lots. Is that not true?
It is true, but people still park there. So, I mean, people park there. We're estimating, I think, 20,000 maybe people parking overnight. Big number. There is going to be a shift. If all of a sudden we open at 7:30, people are going to shift their behavior. I mean, people will still leave before 7:30. But we do think that we could capture approximately $825,000 in new revenue per year, not during the six-month pilot. So during the six-month pilot, if we're right, we'll be at or about $400,000. So I don't want to overinflate, but this is what we think we could generate a year. For the pilot, because because if you expand hours, you have to have full-time staff available. So just for the pilot period, we're really trying to mimic the behavior that we're actually seeing on the ground without really having to introduce an entire second shift where there's a minimum of 3 people that need to, you know, be running that shift. So it's a combination of what we think will capture the market so that we can really understand it, as well as sort of practical management and implementation. Okay. And then just as an aside, I think what would be really effective, and we're going to talk about this more, is particularly for the overnight market, would be to implement at the same time a non-rider fee and or offer the monthly parking option to people, so that if people want to continue to park there overnight, they can do so and pay us a monthly fee and subscribe as a monthly subscriber. So that, I think, would be the full picture of who's parking overnight. Okay. We would also like to test weekend hours of operation. Again, this would be a 6-month pilot, and we would do it on Saturday only for a couple different reasons. One, we think that the Saturday and Sunday market are very similar. You know, because it is weekend hours and there may be some sensitivity to this, we just thought we could capture the Saturday market and learn information from that. We would have adequate information to extrapolate to Sunday. Again, we would implement this pilot across all the stations so that we could get a full picture. And our goal is really to understand, right now we have very little understanding without surveying our parkers of who is parking on the weekend. So we know just from watching people and have a thesis that it's probably 50 to 60% visitors, people who are coming to visit Washington and are parking and are not as price sensitive as residents. Clearly, there's weekend workforce that takes Metro in, and then there are also residents that take Metro in on the weekend. We are not talking necessarily, and I know that there will be discussion about this, about charging the full fare. We could charge a much lower fare just to start collecting the data. And so happy to discuss that. Again, if this $1.44 million in revenue assumptions were that a portion of those folks are visitors and would not be price sensitive. And we could remember, if we had the ability to implement a non-rider fee, you know, we could really play around with different charges, because we also believe that there are folks who are parking and using the asset over the weekend but are not using transit. Right.
Mr. Goldman.
Ms. Albert, what the $1.4 million estimate, is that based on the current weekend parking rates?
No, that was at a discounted rate. We assumed, you know, that we would not offer it at the full daily rate, that we would, you know, cut it in half or bring it down to $4.
So would you be offering at just a daily rate, or would it be an hourly rate? And if so, what is the rate that you would be proposing to charge people on the weekend?
Well, that can be up for discussion. I think for the pilot, we really just look to collect data, so the rate would be somewhere, you know, in the 50 cent to $1 range. So
per hour or per?
No, per day.
Per day.
Per day. Because during the pilot, we're really trying to understand who's parking. That's the purpose of the pilot for the weekend hours. It's not, you know, hardcore revenue generation. We want to know who's parking.
How do you understand who's parking? Are you going to do a survey, or are you going to ask people questions as they come in?
Yeah, we'll do a combination of things. One, just by having the gates down, you're now able to collect information via credit card and also via smart trip card. So we'll know who's riding and who's not riding. So anyway, that's the primary way. And then we also have a program of on-the-ground surveyors, people who are, you know, asking folks, you know, why are you coming to Metro today? You know, what's your purpose? You know, that kind of thing. So we'll have a combination of data.
And would the rates be charged just for parking in the garages or also for the meters?
Well, currently we are just really focused on the garages.
So is that the answer, that this would only affect garages and meter parking would still be free?
Right.
Thank you.
But that's open for discussion, frankly. I haven't really, the big chunk is really in the garages.
With the meters, though, you would have to change the signage more than, I mean, it's probably not worth doing.
Yeah. Really. No, that's a good point. And we did factor, by the way, into all of this, for all of the proposals, if we were to implement them, with the cost of, you know, some extended staff for the expanded hours, as well as for changing signage, approximately $350,000. I'm going to keep going, and I know there'll be continued discussion. Right now, the way that the daily parking rate is that it's set as at a firm price with no ability to slide the price down for lots that have lower utilization. We would like to play around with this a little bit. And so we've proposed a six-month pilot, which we would not apply across the entire system. We would actually strategically select a few stations that have low utilization, where we believe if we brought the price down, it would encourage more people to park there. But the tension is that we don't want to cannibalize, if you will, other parking lots that right now people are willing to pay the full daily rate. So we would need to strategically go through and identify one, maybe two, but really I think one station per jurisdiction to see how this would impact ridership, parking, and also how it would impact people who are currently parking at other stations and coming to the lower rate station. We'd just like to play around with being able to lower fees. And the reason we would want to do this, by the way, is that in the future, if we're successful and we can better manage utilization, and utilization is correlated to ridership, if we can use the daily parking rate as the maximum and offer something lower, I think that that's a much more dynamic model with which we could manage the asset. Okay. Proposal number three is to delegate the board's authority to the GM, the general manager, to apply the currently approved non-rider fee, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that, station by station. So currently, there is an authorized non-rider fee. It's authorized to be anywhere between $6 to $15. The idea behind it, which was first introduced in 1986, is to provide is to be able, for Metro to be able to prioritize riders over people over the general market, people who are not riding the system. And the other idea is that where there is very high utilization of a station, that we could, I don't want to say deter, but really apply a non-rider fee so that, you know, folks will make different choices and park elsewhere in private market in private lots nearby so that our lot is freed up for Metro riders. Right now, the non-rider fee is only implemented at Twin Brook, White Flint, New Carrollton, and Greenbelt. And if any other stations were to be added, right now the board would need to approve that. We believe that being able to apply the non-rider fee is sort of fundamental asset management, and that's why we're asking the board to delegate that authority to the general manager to be able to apply the non-rider fee station by station.
Ms. Albert, could you just briefly give us some background as to why those four stations are the only ones?
Sure. So at Twin Brook, White Flint, at all of them, actually, those four, there's significant private and federal employers, and they are choosing, we see them choosing, you know, the $5 a day Metro parking. When there's significant commercial activity or private activity around the station, and we're offering $5, and commercial lots are offering, you know, 8, 10, 20, there's significant usage of our lots by non-riders. So that's why those stations are here. So that management dynamic is a management dynamic that we would like the authority to go ahead and implement and manage. And we think that that could generate an estimated $1.75 million a year. think it will, our market is not nearly as dynamic as that. So I think at most it would be a six-month change. But candidly, I think we would, because we want to give the public adequate notice, I think we would change on an annual basis and make it part of the tariff system so that there's adequate notice about what the fares, what the fees are in advance and done on a schedule that the public is used to and accustomed to. So no, it would not be done on a daily or hourly basis. It would really, at most, be done on a six-month basis. Just a little bit of background. I think what would be important for you to understand is what criteria we would use in applying the non-rider fee. First would be if there were a high percentage of non-riders, and we can look at that through credit card data and other kinds of things, although I will say there are a lot of riders who use their credit card to pay for parking. Two would be density within proximity, a quarter mile of the metro station of employers and residences, a scarcity of parking in the area. We know that, as we go around, we're all familiar with what's around our metro stations. And then also if there is a strong private parking market nearby. If there's a competitor, if you will, that is commanding, very aggressive parking fees, that would also be taken into account. So that's how we would apply the non-rider fee. Those are the metrics that we use. Yes.
You said that a lot of riders use their credit cards also. How are we going to tell riders from non-riders? I know we can do it with Smart Trip data, but if they're not using their Smart Trip cards to pay their parking fee, how do we tell?
So we experienced at the four stations that do have the non-rider fee that once that was applied and the parker quickly understood that they were being charged, $8.50 instead of $5.10, they very quickly move that account or paying for parking onto their Smart Trip card, which has the ancillary benefit to us of better understanding our rider income. So that shifted, I would say, within 2 months once people started to pick it up.
Just to follow up on what I mentioned before, if we don't enforce the overnight parking, One thing, we're going to connect the Silver Line to Dulles Airport. We already have a connection to National Airport. There's nothing to prevent people from parking in our lots and going on a trip for 3 or 4 days and coming back and paying a whopping $5.10 for a week of parking. And if we don't enforce that overnight, how are we going to control that? And these are people that actually usually take Metro to get to the airport, but are you considering that as part of this program?
Not right now. So we're hindered at this moment because we can't measure when somebody comes in, to your point. So that's something that we're evaluating right now. Would to implement something like that where we could time clock people, we would need to implement a different technology than what we have. So we're evaluating what's available, what could be implemented, because you're right. We would either need to amp up enforcement without changing the technology. We would need to increase enforcement plus offer overnight hang tag or something so that people could pay for multiple days. So that's one option, or going ahead and figuring out a way to measure people on their way in. So we're looking at that. It's just not part of today's package. Okay. And then I just wanted to look. There are very unique opportunities for charging for special events. Right now, there is a special event fee that's authorized at Morgan Boulevard and at Largo, and that's specifically for FedEx Field events. But the reality is that there's special events all over the region. And so what we would like to do is to be able to, basically put a billboard out when there is an event. And we have a definition for it. When we have an event right at that metro station or where it's so large that we would apply a special event fee across the region, but more than likely it's a special event that's at that station in the vicinity and there's a surge in parking demand. Currently, the special event fee is authorized up to $25. It's just limited to these two very specific stations. So what we'd like to do is be able to apply it in accordance with the special event definition. So that's that. I am not even trying to estimate revenue for that because I think it's very undependable. But just as a point of reference, the Women's March that took place in January of this year, we counted cars. We could have earned $500,000 in one day. If we had applied the $5 fee, that wouldn't even be a $10 fee. So just to give you some perspective. And then lastly, yeah, so, well, that's exactly right. So if we had the authority to operate on weekends and collect revenue on weekends, we could have just lowered the gates and we would have collected $500,000 because they would have been paying that daily rate. So that in that particular case, that's right. But for example, if you know, a circus is going to go somewhere and pop up near Metro Station, which we would want to encourage because it'd be a regional draw, you know, that would be a special event right near the Metro, you know, that you would want to be able to charge, you know, higher than $5, for example. So when there's special festivals, community events that would really drive, you know, a high demand for parking, that's what we would be looking at. But you're right, that could have been accomplished if we had the authority to collect revenue on weekends. But here you kind of have a dual option. Okay, and the last two proposals concern our use regulations. Right now, and this is really where there's significant revenue to be generated, and it's primarily in our ability to lease empty or vacant parking spaces to other parties. On the table right now are four requests for two private employers and two governments to lease anywhere between 70 and 350 parking spaces each. So those space leases could be really valuable. They're short-term leases, and right now the use regulations limit us in being able to go ahead and engage in those parking space leases. So in order to make it happen, what we'd like to do is ask the board to delegate authority to the general manager to allow incidental non-transit public uses of parking facilities during revenue time periods. Right now it's limited to off-peak hours. But a space lease, if a commercial enterprise wants to lease 100 spaces from us, they can't do that because they would want those spaces, those vacant spaces, what is now vacant, they would want those spaces during revenue-generating hours. So that's one thing. And then, because of the definition of commercial uses, we would ask that the board delegate authority to the general manager to be able to approve commercial uses. A space lease to a private employer is a commercial use. And then this would be a request to amend the WMATA use regulations. And this is already contemplated by the board and has been for many years, again, since the 1980s, repeated again in 2002, which is a desire by the board that Metro offer its parking lots during the weekends for community and other kinds of events. But without being able to sell food and drink, those events are not successful. So we would ask to amend the use regulations to sell food and drink, the ability to sell food and drink at Metro parking facilities on weekends only, where ridership is low and that food is not really intended for riders to take into the system, but is really intended to support the viability of the event. The estimated revenues are $4 million a year, and those are really not based on community weekend activities, but wholly based on our projections for the parking space lease revenue. See this very well. Oh, no, you can't.
Can I have
a summary? In total, if we were to implement all of these proposals, we believe that we could generate an additional $8 million a year.
Can I ask a question on the...
One moment. Are you done, Ms. Albert?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay.
No. Well, that's it on
well,
the revenue,
it.
And then we need
you
to talk about the employee parking. Do you want me to do that now? Or
why don't we do that now?
Okay.
Ms. Porter, can your question wait? Or, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So in 1986, I mentioned the non-rider fee. It's implemented at the four stations. And I'll use an example at New Carrollton specifically. We have approximately 900 Metro employees who live near New Carrollton. It is an end-of-line station. And so when they come to work, because there's not adequate parking at work, they park at the Metro parking lot. We have adequate parking at New Carrollton. And so we would like to be able to offer the Metro employee who has no other parking options, the daily parking rate of $5.10, specifically at New Carrollton, rather than charging them the surcharge. And so we're just generically saying if we were to apply the non-rider parking rate, you know, more systematically across the system, we would just like a blanket exemption for Metro employees to just pay the daily parking rate as opposed to the non-rider parking. So that was the last agenda item. And so these are recommendations to approve as many as 6 proposals to enhance parking revenue and optimize utilization, as well as to amend the non-rider, the non-Metro user parking fee program to exempt Metro employees.
Thank you, Ms. Albert, for that presentation. Let's leave this slide up. I know this will be an action by the committee, so I'll go it. But I think this is an important enough issue where we definitely need to have consensus by the other board members, obviously, to move forward on this. So are there any questions and comments to start by the committee members, and then we'll open it up to everyone else?
Sure. Sure. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Smedberg. Yep. First of all, I just want to say that we know we are facing such financial challenges that we have to look everywhere, and we'll look at other places to find revenue, to find efficiencies, and this is one, so I commend staff on doing that. This has been actually within the committee, at least. We've met a few times and talked this through for our colleagues who are asking some of the questions that perhaps we may have already talked a little bit about. But there are a couple things in here, Nina, that I do want to ask specifically. And one of them is that the surcharge right now at Greenbelt and at New Carrollton is encumbered. We know, right, that that goes towards some development projects and things like that in Prince George's County. I want to make sure that this, the way that this amendment is, I'm sorry, the way that the that this is written won't supersede that or change that, because there's actually there's some bonding that's going on with that revenue. And so we did need to make sure that this doesn't do that, nor that it will change that framework at those locations. Has that been contemplated?
Yeah, that's a great point. This $8 million is total revenue collected, but for every space lease, for every new non-rider fee or parker, the parking surcharge that's pledged to each of the jurisdictions in accordance with your parking surcharge agreement would be put into the account. So that $8 million is net. What would net to Metro is 85% of that, and then, you know, the other 15%, approximately
right,
the numbers, would go into the respective parking surcharge.
Right. So I just want to make sure that still is in place. So for others who would perhaps, they don't have this kind of agreement. So you're contemplating that agreement across the board.
Correct.
And that they probably are not aware of that.
Right.
Yeah, and others are probably not aware that is how that's organized. So so there's that. The second thing is that we are a transit agency first and foremost. And so I am a little concerned about the impact on ridership on the weekend, where we already have really poor utilization actually of the rail itself. And I like the idea of a pilot. I like the idea of looking at it that way. But I am concerned that to a certain degree that the nominal fee will tell us one thing, right? But it won't necessarily tell us if we did raise that number, the impact that it will have actually on the casual rider who now decides that this is now, you now have, you've gone past the elasticity point for utilization of our rail system because you now, you know, you've increased the total cost to the person who, right now, they've built it in. They ride on the weekend because they know they don't have to pay the extra $5, you know, for the parking. So I think that we got to make sure, I'm not sure how you test for that, but we need to be aware of that impact on utilization of the rail. I also, this happens to me from other projects that are similar to this, that the there will be a real displacement, particularly with the overnight, of charging into the neighborhoods, and it's going to have a real impact. And I think that we do need to be aware of that and measure and be in touch with the contiguous communities who are, you talked about like 20,000 cars, let's say half of them end up now going onto the streets and stuff like that and the neighborhoods and stuff like that, which could really create some real negative backwards impact that you're not necessarily going to think about, but those people are our neighbors, including for Metro, and it really will, it happens all the time. You address the issue in one place with parking, and it just moves them and it creates an issue somewhere else. So I just want to make sure that we definitely are very aware and that we also let people know that we do outreach not just at the stations themselves, but that the people in the surrounding neighborhoods are made aware that this is going to be happening because they're also the ones who are parking there, as you well know, as we've talked about. But I am, I am definitely supportive of the idea of better flexibility and being able to do a better job of managing this asset. So I think that this is a good proposal, something that we should support. But we have to be very, obviously there are those things that we have to be careful with on the measurements and how it's going to impact our ridership. Thank you.
Mr. Drumshaw, do you have any comments or questions before we open it up?
Sure, just one comment. I wanted to acknowledge that Tony Costa did a lot of work on this, and I think this is a very good example of the type of board management dynamic that we want to foster again and again. I think this is also something that hasn't, the work on this policy has informed a lot of our thinking on the board governance and the opportunity to focus on some key issues to create space for management to consider options, alternatives, experimentation, so they're not wasting a lot of time on proposals that come to the board and are kind of rejected in a knee-jerk manner. So that I think the collaboration on this effort has been exemplary. Hopefully we can use it as a benchmark going forward. So I'm completely supportive of the whole range of options that you have here and look forward to, as you said, getting more information, more data to inform our business.
First of all, I had a question on the number five proposal. If I recall, the reason that we limited approving commercial uses to non-peak, non-revenue periods was because of a concern that it would compete with transit riders. Is there an explicit provision in what you're considering that would not allow consideration of anything that would reduce parking for transit riders in situations where there might be a chance that there would be a limited amount of parking for transit riders?
That is certainly the intent, is that this is not designed to limit access. The goal and the priority is always to provide parking access for transit users. What we're trying to do is deal with circumstances when there is significant vacancy. But to your point, we will absolutely propose and include either a metric or a stated prioritization of transit riders, and that's how these commercial uses must be evaluated against.
Okay, thank you. And I also wanted to congratulate the committee. I agree with Mr. Dormjo that this was a really good effort. It is not only enhances revenue, but it also could very well enhance ridership. I like the idea that there are, I share Mr. Augustine's concerns about the weekend hours, but I think other than that, the effect of most of these proposals is to actually open up parking for transit riders, and it could very well both increase revenue and has the potential to increase ridership, and we very rarely see proposals to do both of those things.
I wanted to ask your numbers relative to how you compare them. 1B, the piloting, the testing the weekend hours in all stations is what you have there, right? And so does the number give you any understanding of just not parking but also transit ridership? So you're not counting ridership or revenue on that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So that's an excellent point. One of the things at the end of the pilot, first of all, you know, we would come back to the board and share the results of the pilot. This number only reflects parking revenue, but what we need to do is also measure ridership revenue so that you can get a full picture of what the dynamic is between the two. So, yes.
And the concern I have is that if we say all stations, I think that you can tell in some locations already the dynamic of, say, end-of-the-line stations. That's a very given that it's going to it generates probably a large amount of parking, thus you would naturally maybe not be able to pick up as much. But I think what happens on those is that it brings ridership that is not necessarily measured right now and seen, but when you put in the parking, will it affect that? And I think that is a consideration that you have. I think the idea of the pilot is a very good idea, because I think what we could deduce from some of this is that we can bring folks in with a higher parking rate, and then they are willing to stay with that if the rate is only going to be bounced up a small amount. It's just those that where the end of the line parking really does support the rail to such an extent, and that's the concern.
Mr. Goldman, Mr. Dorsey.
Thank you. I did participate in some of the workup meetings of the committee, even though I'm not a member of this committee, but by Tony and Paul participated in, and I fully support the direction you're going with these six pilots. In fact, I would like you to be more aggressive, and I would like the action by the committee to be more aggressive. In one area where I would encourage you to be more aggressive, and I would suggest committee be more aggressive, is in terms of number six, the amendment of the USA regulations. The pilot at Grosvenor Strathmore was very successful, was very well received by the community. People said it was great having those facilities there, and we found a use for 1,000 series rail cars as well in the process. But I would like to try and propose and suggest two amendments to broaden what you asked for there. And the first is you seem to be limiting this to the weekends. And I guess I would encourage you in the committee to expand it to include weekends and holidays and other similar days. For example, what I'm thinking about is over the Thanksgiving four-day period. There's no reason why on that Friday, we're on Thanksgiving Day itself, you should limit yourself that you can't use these, take an exception to these use regulations. If someone wants to have a fare at a station, they can do it, and they can run it for a full four-day period. The other change I suggest is that you just talk about permit sale of beverages. And I guess my question is that the only thing barred by the present use regulation? For example, could someone have a fare and have a stall and sell knickknacks, Cheerios, and locally crafts and arts and crafts?
Currently, that is permitted.
That is permitted. I'm trying to see if there's something that, besides food and beverage, that wouldn't be permitted under the current regulations.
And tobacco is not permitted as well. So the three prohibitions for what you can sell are food, beverage, and tobacco. And the food and the beverage is what drives festivals, events. You have a sporting event, you got to be able to sell.
take it that by eliminating restriction on food and beverage, you know, you could have a farmer's market and people
exactly.
could sell cheeses and meats. It wouldn't have to be just prepared, you know, foods.
That's exactly right. And that's, you know, farmer's markets are candidly one of the most frequent things that, you know, a lot of communities ask us for. And the prohibition of selling food and drink is what's, you know, is why we haven't been able to meet some of those requests.
I think it would be good if you make clear, either in the regulation or how you present this, you know, that the regulations only ban food and beverage now, and that the authorization here will allow a farmer's market so that besides food and beverages, you could be selling crafts and Cheerios and other things in a full farmer's market. But you're not just authorizing the sale of food and beverages on Ramada property and Ramada parking facilities. So, again, I would encourage you and the committee to be more aggressive in implementing these pilot number six.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. Mr. Dorsey, and Ms. Rice.
Yeah, I would just briefly echo everything that the people have said in terms of respecting the quality of this work and the innovativeness of the proposals and how it meets some very, very well-stated goals that are solid. I do share some concerns about 1B as well, and just want to identify the sort of marketing or messaging challenge that we're going to have in terms of delivering the same kinds of fees on the weekend when there's a different level of service by design than what people may get during the week. So does this pilot give you the opportunity to consider maybe a different weekend fee, not just going from free to
$5?
I thought that's what
yes,
but,
I mean,
even lower.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
Candidly, our goal on the weekend is really to collect information.
Okay.
The only way that we can do it, well, not the only way, but a very efficient way to do it is to be able to lower the gate and charge. Like right now on the weekends, a lot of people use the parking lots as a shuttle drop-off. So a lot of people roll into the parking lots, drop off their friends or family at the metro station, roll back out. So when we look at, we do collect data on who's coming in and out on the parking lots on the weekends, but it's not clean because, you know, there's a lot more volume. At East Falls Church, for example, there's 300% utilization on the weekends. Well, that's an inaccurate number. So we'd want to impose just enough of a fee, a quarter, 50 cents, a buck, that would shift all those people who are doing drop-off activity to the Kiss and Ride, which is the, you know, that service and that ability to drop friends off will continue, but again, not be so high that we're going to eliminate parkers. Right now, the weekend pilot, what we're trying to understand is who is parking. Ms. Hudgens mentioned the end-of-line stations. The end-of-line stations during the weekends are still our most highly utilized stations, primarily because, and this is why we say, we suspect, our thesis is, most people who are many people who are parking on the weekends are visitors. So there's going to be, you know, a different price sensitivity of visitors to the average resident who's, you know, using, you know, coming into town for recreation or for entertainment. So, again, but before we try and parse through how we're going to manage and charge visitors who aren't price sensitive versus residents who are, we first need to see what the numbers are. And so for the weekend pilot, nominal fee to deter the drop-off guys, but not so high that we would, you know, a quarter or 50 cents is not going to deter a rider who's coming to the system.
So thank you. So the estimates that you gave with the Women's March hypothetical, what was that based on? What price point?
So we have $5 a day, the daily parking.
Okay, that's why I was confused.
Yeah,
okay.
It was just saying if we had the ability to close the gates and collected the daily parking fee, we would have gotten, you know, close to $500,000. And the reason we know that is because we had people working those days. You know, so.
Okay. Mr. Bolger?
Yeah, please.
I guess the question is, what's the plan after the six-month pilot? I assume it would be coming back to
the
board for
a
report,
share with
full
you
report,
the results and recommend,
and then recommendations
for
more
there.
Final steps.
Correct.
Yeah. After the pilot.
The other thing that's required for all the elements that are pilots is a Title VI analysis because you're going to be messing around.
Okay, let me ask this of everyone here. This is a menu of options, as Ms. Albert said. Is there anyone that feels strongly that one of these options should be taken out of the proposal?
Mr. Smedberg, as a member of the committee, I'm actually really ready to make a motion to accept what they've given to us and move forward.
Okay.
And,
all right.
But we wouldn't have to get a second at all.
Second. Now, is that in consideration of Mr. Goldman's suggestion?
Well, no. I mean, what we originally had, what's been presented today, I think, you know, it's been well thought out, thought through. We should work with that because there were some considerations about the additions. Let's just go with what we have. Well, I mean, the only reason why I had questions about it is because, you know, the weekend, as they've submitted here, is very different, obviously, than when you start getting it into the week. Well, not just the holidays. I mean, he wants the whole thing. So if you extend it into that, I mean, we start back into the conversation about the fact that we don't allow food and beverage on the system itself, and that's when it blossoms into that conversation, which is a much larger conversation for everybody in the region, which is really what's held this back, I believe.
Okay, well, Mr. Goldman, I think you were just saying expanded to holidays, right?
Holidays. The weekdays as well as a holiday period.
And a holiday period, not all weekdays, right?
Yeah, that's the extending of the weekend. Then that's fine. Right. The only concern that I have, of course, is we have that prohibition about food and beverage actually on the train. These things which are outside of the train, I'm with you on that. It's just, you know, when do we start to have that impact and we start to get concerned about the condition inside of our stations, which we know we talk about and we have that prohibition. That's my only concern. But I didn't understand exactly that you really were still talking about the time periods when we have underutilization inside of our rail system that's really more an outside of it, and that's sure. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so were you okay with that amendment, Mr. Johnson? For holidays, yeah. Okay.
Sorry, there's just one other minor change. I just detected a little bit of a mistake in board resolution in this. So in the last paragraph resolved, it says the authority to allow sale of food and beverages on Metro Rail surface park and ride lots. We just like it to say parking facilities. For example, the Kiss and Ride might be a good location. So we just wanted it to be broader. And then on weekends, and then I think it would be on holidays.
Okay, so as is the action item that has been put forth that we have, incorporating the amendments from Mr. Goldman and incorporating the improvement in the language from Ms. Albert, I make the motion that we put forth this proposal as submitted.
Okay. All right, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Extensions. All right, thank you. And I do want to note, as Mr. Jarmusch said earlier, Tony Costa, the board member, did do a lot of work on this.
Definitely.
Evans also raised the parking issue, and so and it really was a good example of being proactive and strategic here and an asset that we needed to examine. So thank you.
And then I just feel the obligation to correct the record. I misspoke earlier when I said how many overnight parkers there are. I had said 20,000, and it's 2,000. So off by a factor of
a few.
No, I think for the public record, it's probably important to correct
that. Sal, we didn't accept the make a change on the weekend parking. in some of those stations. Can you bring your, could you provide your data, how you have used the data in terms of what you use to determine that count, that is weekend riders, using Smart Trip, using credit card, is that, and that's the data that you use, and the reliability of that data, that is how many people actually use those instruments relevant.
You mean currently, or in
yes,
6 months you would like us to report back?
Well, no. I'm asking before we get there.
Okay, currently the data that we have available about weekend parkers can be estimated on Smart Trip, like how many Smart Trip riders are there, and also correlating that with we have what they call loop counts. Like we have rumble strips. So, when somebody rolls in, you know that a car went in, but what we don't know is how long they parked there.
Mm-hmm.
And so our data about weekend parking right now is very limited, and that's why we'd like to do the pilot, is to understand better what's happening on the weekends and who's riding on the weekends. But, yes, Smart Trip information is how we know what the ridership is, but not necessarily who the parker is.
And if, I know we're done, but if I could just ask a follow-up to that. So with this pilot, or did you consider as part of your determining that this would be the pilot, giving an opportunity for Smart Trip riders to be at that nominal fee, but then for non-Smart Trip users, credit card or other payment users to pay a higher rate?
I think.
Well, we hadn't gotten there yet, candidly. And right at this moment, the non-rider fee, we're not able to apply it liberally. So if you're going to have different rate structures, we would need to have had the non-rider fee approved. Right now, for weekends, we don't want to mess around too much with weekend ridership. So we would just really be looking at applying a nominal fee, parking fee, that would be flat, regardless of who's coming in.
But that could be a potential next
in the future,
evolution.
That could definitely be something that we look at. But at this moment, we're just trying to collect information.
Okay. Next. Thank you, Ms. Albert. Next, we have the Union Station project. I'll ask the committee members if they feel they need the presentation on this project, or if we can just go to discussion. This has been underway now since 2014. Agreements from the three parties, as we had mentioned, all along the way, including Amtrak, the District of Columbia, and Maryland. This will be funded in reimbursable transit project dollars. We are not spending any Metro money on this.
I would be perfectly comfortable with that. The only thing that I would ask, and this is a question to staff, because I've spoken with MDOT. MDOT has shared this with me, just as far as that reimbursable number, there's been an investment by the state of Maryland, I believe, some $700,000 thus far. But I think that at this moment that is the extent of the investment that the state of Maryland is going to make. And just to make sure that we understand that the balance of the investment is already secured by the district and other parties. And if that's the case, then, we're good to go. Is that the case? That's the case? All right, cool. Sure. Let's do it.
I'm always okay with the positions of the state of Maryland.
Who's taking minutes today? Right? All right.
So I'd like to make a motion. Yeah, absolutely. That we accept this proposal as stated that we have in our materials with regard to the Union Station Metro project. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Kanana, for your work on this as well.
Yep.
All right. With that, we've come to the conclusion of our meeting. Is there any other business? If not, is there a motion to adjourn? All right. Thank you. We're a little late.